Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and it's good to be here. I haven't found enough to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. Yeah, it's been a while. I forget sometimes. So it's good to be here, and I have a little something I really, you know, on my heart to maybe talk about, and we'll see how it goes. I came today a little bit, almost 34 years ago, to stop drinking. If you want to stop drinking, AA is probably a good place to go. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's in the name. It's probably the primary deal. AA, apparently not drinking is like really important in Alcoholics Anonymous. Have you all noticed that? Yeah. It's a big deal. They hand out all these chips, these medallions during your first year, and then they have birthday night, and it's a wonderful thing. But somehow, I'm not sure when I started realizing that there was more. I'm not sure when it really I'm not sure when it really dawned upon me that there was more than just not drinking. I'm not sure when it totally dawned upon me that not drinking can actually be a very painful experience. I'm not sure whether it really, when it dawned on me that things can get pretty crappy when you're not drinking. They can be crappy when you're drinking. It can be crappy when you're not drinking. You know, they have that saying in AA that we tell newcomers, my worst day sober isn't better than my best day drunk. Is that, anybody ever heard that? Well, that's a lie. If you don't know that's a lie, then you have just not been around here long enough. Hey, that's, listen. There's a time and a place for every AA. AA says a lot of stuff. A lot of bait and switch stuff. It's cool. You know what I mean? It gets you where you want to go. Like they say this line in the, what do they say in the sixth step? We don't want to deprecate material achievement. You know, they say that in the sixth step. The step that separates the men from the boys. I think it's the sixth or seventh. I'm not sure. They say, we don't want to deprecate material achievement. And what they're trying to get you to focus on is God only and not worry about things. So they say, we don't want to put down material achievement. But then like two sentences later, they say, no type of person has made a worse mess of living their lives based upon, you know, seeking romance, money, property, or romance. So in one sense, they say, we don't want to put down material achievement. On the other hand, they say, but for you, you better stay away from it. So in AA, we have a way of saying things to people, you know, like, don't worry about the God thing, and then the whole thing's about God, you know. You know, your worst, you know, when somebody's going through something, hey, listen, your worst day sober, the last day drunk. No, things can be pretty bad. It can be pretty bad when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you got 4 kids and your house is being foreclosed on, you got $50 in the bank, you know where the money's going from, and you are as sober as a judge. And you got no idea where the money's coming from. Things get pretty bad when you get a check and you deposit it in order to put money in your car for gas, and all of a sudden the check bounces that the guy gave you, or you know, you get fired from a job, or how about, I always like when 3 bad things happen to you at the same time. You know, I'm one of these guys, like, I can handle one thing, you know, and I can handle one thing pretty good. I can handle 2 things. I can balance 2 things. But you get 3 plates spinning at the same time, you know, this happens, that happens, and the boss fires me, and my wife screams at me, you know what I mean? And I'm going psychotic, you know? I mean, there's a point at which I break, you know, that kind of thing. So things can get pretty difficult. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have it here, I'll open it up if I need it, but in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about the men and women being dry at the moment. It says, being dry at the moment, it says, I don't miss it. You know, feel better, looking better, having a better time. He says, we smile at such Sally. We know he'll try the old game again. Inwardly, give anything, take a few drinks and get away with it, because he's not happy with his sobriety. Whatever that means, to be happy with your sobriety. You know, you can be sober and be very unhappy. You know, we have examples of people in the news today that were sober for a time and were very unhappy. Well, maybe they were extremely unhappy. There's a line in the big book, in the third edition, There's a story in third edition called Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. I don't think it's not in the first edition. It's a story about Bill Dotson. Bill Dotson was the man on the bed. Anybody ever seen the picture of the man on the bed? He's sitting there on the bed, and there's Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob. He was the third guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a lawyer. And he was really at the end of his rope, and they came up to him. They used the Bible, because between 1935 and 1939, that was the source material for Alcoholics Anonymous. And the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says the books that they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the book of James down the road regarding what I'm going to talk about tonight. But in any event, they 12-stepped. I don't know what they called it, 12. They didn't call it 12-stepping at the time. They went up to Bill Dotson while he was sitting on the bed with the Bible, and they spoke to him, you know, the way we speak to people. And he was the third guy who got sober in AA. So he writes a story called Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. It's in your big book. In the story, he was about a few weeks sober. He was right out of the hospital, and he was sitting in his kitchen with his wife, Henrietta. And what he says in the story is that Bill Wilson was there, and this is the way he frames it, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'll try to do it from memory the best way I can. He says, "I knew there was something more." Now, he was sober 3 or 4 weeks out of the hospital, and he was sitting there, and he's watching Bill Wilson. He says, "I knew there was something more. Something I hadn't got, something a person ought to have, and I wanted it. I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, and I wanted that deal. I wanted to find out why they had this release, this happiness, this something I thought a person ought to have." You know, so often in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm confronted with people, and they can have, I've been confronted with people that have 30 years plus and 30 days plus that are sad. They're just sad. They're just, I'm telling you, they're just pathetic. I don't say that, but they're just unbelievably in a state of self-pity. You know, it's like life is weighing on them. They are not, you know, the big book says we have found much of heaven. And we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And I got to tell you this. They're not talking about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not talking about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know of. They're not talking about this fellowship, the joy of heaven, the rocket ship, listen, 1 or 2, 3 or 4 here and there. And so Bill Dotson says, he looks around, he says, "I looked at these guys and I said they had such a release, they had such a happiness, they had such a thing, something I thought a person ought to have, and I was trying to find the answer. I was trying to find out how they got this deal. I remember going to AA meetings trying to figure out how to get that deal. I mean, I was sober. You know, and every once in a while I'd have a good time, and every once in a while I'd have fun, and I would laugh, and, you know, I'd have my friends, and it wasn't a horrible experience, but I knew there was something more. I used to follow people around, you know, AA speakers, you know, Joe Snyder, Eddie Edwards, you know, different guys around, because I would spot these guys that had that deal. I would spot the guys that had the deal. I knew there was something more. I would spot these guys, and I would follow them around to AA meetings, and I'd listen to them, because I think that maybe I get the secret. You know, I'd hear the secret. Like maybe I'd go to a meeting, you know what I mean? And they would say something, and I'd walk out, and I'd have it, you know? And whatever the heck they had, so they no longer were scared, that no longer had anxiety, no longer couldn't get to sleep at night because they were worried about the money. No longer worried about what other people thought about them. No longer worried about what was going to happen in the future. No longer worried about what I did last week. Those voices, "You're a piece of crap, you know, you ought to be dead," would go away. You know, all the condemning voices, all the guilt, all the crap. I figured I'd go to a meeting, and I'd listen to one of these guys, and somehow I'd get it. You know what I mean? Not just the not drinking thing. I had the not drinking thing down, but I'd get the not thinking, the feeling good about myself thing, or whatever the heck thing is they had that I never had, and it didn't happen for me. Didn't happen. Not for many, many, many years. Didn't happen. And I went to, I remember going to a meeting early on. Listen, life for alcohol, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented, they're selfish, they're self-centered, they're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You know, I mean, they got issues. Alcoholics, this is not by any means Well People's Anonymous. I used to go to my sponsor and I'd complain about the people in AA. He says, "Well, Russell, you must have thought you were joining Well People's Anonymous." No, I don't think so. You know, I used to complain about the people in AA. I went to my, and you know, complain about the people in AA. Can you imagine? Can you even imagine that? You know? There's a lot of crazy people in AA. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's either the good news or the bad news, depending upon how you look at it. Now, I'm going to tell you even worse news. There's more crazier people out there. I'm serious. And they don't have a program. They're not even trying to work a program. You know what I mean? There's some good ones. You know what I mean? There's some really crazy shit going on out there. You know? And guess what? This is the only planet we got. This is it, you know? I know you want to move. I know you figure that's the answer if you move, but there's only one problem. Wherever you go, you're probably going to be going with you. There is a possibility that as crazy as we are and as crazy as people are out there, there's a possibility that there may be a problem with me. You know, we have a spiritual axiom here. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So I went to a meeting. You know, just because I stopped drinking doesn't mean I stopped thinking. And my best thinking, as my sponsor say, got me in here. So I remember I went to, my sponsor told me I ought to join a group. I ought to join a home group. So I immediately said, well, what group do you belong to? He says, you wouldn't like my group. You know, so I said, I'm sensitive. I thought you didn't want me to join, you know. I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. But he said, well, go join a group. So I went around looking for it. So I go to this place called the South Dade Room in Dade County. And I walk in. I'm brand new. I've got like, you know, a month or two or so. What if that, you know? And I walk in and I sit where newcomers sit, like all the way to the back of the room. I mean, if I was any farther back, I'd be inside the wall. And you know, I'm sort of like hoping that somebody there will recognize me for the genius I am and elect me president of Alcoholics Anonymous, or, you know, as long as they don't ask me to talk because I'm not ready, you know. And, I'm in one sense, I'm a piece of crap. In the other sense, I'm the greatest in the world. They got to sort of put that together. And I'm looking at the people. They're all sitting at tables, you know. They had tables set up. And there were like three people at this table and three people at that table and four people at that table. And, you know, they're like, you know, they're doing like that AA thing, those little click thing, you know, where they're all laughing and joking, you know. And, you know, I'm waiting for somebody to come up and introduce themselves to me, because I'm sure I'm not going to introduce themselves to, you know, And nobody does it. And the meeting starts and it goes around the room. And the speaker, I think he was calling on people. He said, Fred, what do you have to say? And Joe, what do you have to say? And, like, nobody called on me. And so after the meeting, I left the meeting, and, you know, and I'm sitting back there saying, you know, I'm saying love and tolerance is our code, you know, the newcomers are most important, what a bunch of bullshit, you know. Real stupid shit. You know, I go to my, so he said, how'd you like the meeting at the South Dade Room? And so I told him the truth, you know, the truth. I mean, I didn't lie, I told him the truth. They said, it's bullshit, the whole meeting's bullshit. Everybody in there is bullshit. They're a bunch of phony bullshit artists, you know. I mean, you know, the newcomer's supposed to be the, I sat there in the back. They're all sitting there in their little cliques. They're all, you know, saying, you know, they're all laughing. And nobody came up to me. You know, nobody introduced themselves. They didn't have me talk, you know, nothing, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, it's all bullshit. It was all talk, no act, you know. I mean, it's a bunch of guys, a bullshit group. And so he looks at me and he says, well, I'll tell you what I want you to do. He says, I'd like to go back to that group and I want you to join one of those cliques. So I said, what are you talking about? He says, I want you to go back to the group and you pick one of the cliques and you join, you know, just join the clique. So I was still at that stage where I was actually worried about drinking. Being afraid of drinking is a real good thing because it'll have you do crap. See, if you're not scared of drinking, you just get another sponsor. You don't do any of that shit. You don't go back to the group. I'm getting another sponsor. This guy's weird, you know. But when you're scared of drinking, you will do stuff. You know what I mean? You know, you will do crazy stuff. You know, and stuff that no self-respecting alcoholic will ever do. So I was still at that stage where I was scared of drinking. So I went back to the group, same time, and. And I went up to one of the tables and I said, "My name's Russell, I'm brand new." And he says, "Oh, hey man, sit down." And they sat down. One guy got me a cup of coffee. Other guy shook my hand. They said, "Hey, why don't you do the meeting?" I said, "Really?" He says, "I'm only got like a month." He said, "No, you can do the meeting." So it was like a little discussion. I said something. Who knows what I said? It went around, everything that happened. They said, "Hey man, you were great. Hey, keep coming back," and everything like that. And they shook my hand. I said, "That was fantastic, Russell. And thanks a lot for coming and thanks for sharing." And I got up and I walked out and I saw my sponsor later on that day. He says, "So how's the meeting?" I said, "That's a fantastic group." He said, I told him, I said, "I think they had a whole different number of people. I think the people were all different, you know?" And you see, and well, the only thing that changed in that group was me. I'm the only thing that, you see, the truth is, when I first walked in there, that was the most horrible group in the world. Now, the truth is, when I walked in there the next time, it was the greatest group in the world. And the only thing that changed was me and my attitude. And I walk into it one day, he tells me to go back to some group, and he says, "This guy's speaking, he's a really good speaker." So I sit there, and the guy says, "My name's Joe, and I'm a recovered alcoholic." So, you know, I've been to, you know, maybe what, who knows, you know, 20 meetings by that time. I mean, I was an expert, and I knew that there was no cure for this disease. You couldn't be cured from this disease, you know, and I knew I had heard that I was a recovering alcoholic. I am recovering. I'm always recovering. I know there is no recovered. I was recovering, you know, and so all through the meeting, I'm saying, you know, this guy's such a liar. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's telling people they can be cured. He's killing people. Somebody ought to raise their hand and say, "This guy's a phony," and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other thing. I didn't hear a word he said because I couldn't believe they would let a guy talk to like 100 people who didn't know what he was talking about. So when the meeting was over, I went out, and my sponsor said to him, and I couldn't believe I had to sit there. I didn't want to sit there. I wanted to leave. And my sponsor said to me, he says, "So how'd you think of, what'd you think of the speaker? He's good." He said, he's an idiot. He doesn't know anything. I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "He said that he was a recovered alcoholic." And my sponsor said, "Well, you are." I said, "Well, no, I'm recovering." He says, "Russell, read the book." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Read the book." He says, "It says we are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless sense of mind, state of mind and body." And I looked at the book, and it was right there, recovered, because he apparently had like 25 years. He had read the book, apparently. And I didn't hear a word he said because of my attitude. Now, my attitude, I wasn't like a bad guy. No, that's wrong. I was going to say I wasn't a bad guy. I am a bad guy. I don't think I'm a bad guy. I think I'm a nice guy. But my attitude is a crappy, know-it-all, self-seeking, selfish, closed-minded, arrogant attitude. And it's not that it's bad or good. It's just that's an alcoholic. That's a certain description of an alcoholic personality. He says our chief characteristic is defiance. I said every negative attribute that will hurt me in life and allow me to hurt other people that I had, you guys have. There ain't nothing I'm going to say about me that you guys don't have a piece of it. You understand? That's the nature of the attitude. And I'm driving my sponsor. How do you get rid of, and you know something? What would you call that? I mean, I'm glad we have the word alcoholic because that sort of sums it up. If you're an alcoholic, there should be another word that, asshole. I don't know. What do you call a person? Narcissistic, arrogant, idiot. I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm not putting you guys. I'm talking about myself. But I'm sitting. It's a bad deal. Alcoholics are nasty. They're nasty to other people. They hurt other people. They rip their hearts out. They don't even know. They don't even care. You know, all they do is think about themselves. You know, I got a flat tire. I'm bitching moaning. I can't believe this has happened to me. I can't freaking believe this has happened to me. You can be sitting there dying of terminal cancer. You can have you can be stage four breast cancer sitting as a passenger in my car, and I'm saying, I can't believe what's happening to me. You know? He says, well, I got cancer. I said, yeah, but look at my flat. You know what I mean? I mean, I am whatever quality you need to have to make you a crummy human being, if you're an alcoholic, I got it. Guilty as charged, okay? And on the other hand, I think I'm the greatest thing since Swiss cheese. You know, I think I'm great, and I'm going to defend myself, you know, at all costs, you know. Seldom right, but never in doubt, I can tell you that. So then I'm driving with my sponsor. I mean, this is me. This is my attitude. I don't have to go to meetings to cop that. Believe me, I don't need to go to meetings to hurt people who have a shitty attitude. It comes so naturally. As a matter of fact, it's comfortable. I'm uncomfortable adapting a decent, gracious attitude. So I'm driving my car with my sponsor. I'm about 7-8 months sober. And we're going to go pick up Bobby, who was a guy my sponsor also. He was like one of my litter mates. He sponsored me and Bobby. I picked up a white chip, never drank again. Bobby, every 30 days, would drink. And he would say, he would be good for like 15, 20 days. Then around 25, day 25, he'd say, I'm coming up on that time again. He was like on a timer. It was, I'm coming up on that time again. He says, Russ, you're an alcoholic, but I'm an alcoholic, and I have that 30-day thing. You know what I mean? Coming up at that time. And he'd be good, and then on the 29th day, we're coming 30 days, he's gone. And he'd wind up in Bark or be arrested, and we'd go up, and we would get him every 30 days, and he'd say, he'd be remorseful, saying, this is going to happen again. He's going to do it differently. And my sponsor, you know, Bob, would pick up Bobby and me, and we'd take him down. He'd give him, you know, a place to stay. You take him around to meetings, and Bobby would be good for like 29 days, and then goodbye. You know, he'd be off to, and we did this 4, 5, 6 times, and I'm watching this going on. I'm watching this deal, you know? I'm watching it. You know, I'm taking names and notes, you know, photographs, videos, you know, and it's pissing me off, you know, because this guy is, besides being, I mean, the truth is he's a phony baloney. He's a liar. He's a manipulator. You know, essentially everything I am. You know what I mean? But you know, he's a lying, manipulated, phony, self-centered, you know, alcoholic who doesn't give a crap about anybody, and he's hurting my sponsor. I can see he's hurting my sponsor because my sponsor's trying to help him, and my sponsor, he's got like 20 years, but he's too stupid to see what's really going on. You see? And I have to protect my sponsor because I love my sponsor, you know? And so we're driving up one day. You understand what I'm saying? And let me tell you something. When you live your life in hatred, you know how you know when you live your life in hatred, when you're thinking of murdering people all the time. Hey, listen, there ain't no probation in my I don't have such a thing as probation. You cut me up in traffic, it's death. It's not even death. I'll kill you, resurrect you, and kill you again. I chop your head off, I kill you, I resurrect you, and then I chop your kids' heads off in front of you before you, I just don't like killing you before you suffer. You can't suffer enough if you piss me off. You know what I mean? Sure, you guys are laughing. You don't know what it's like. You don't know how many people I have killed for minor indiscretions. You know what I mean? You know, I just like wiping them out, boiling them in oil, all sorts of stuff. You know what I mean? It's a good thing I don't have the power. Believe me, it's a real good thing I'm not president. It would be a real bad deal for everybody with these executive orders and everything, you know? You know, you guys would be in big trouble laughing at me like that, you know? I mean, so, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there, and I'm upset because of what Bobby is doing. And so we're driving up, and I'm saying to my sponsor, I said, you know, you ought to turn this car around. He said, what? He says, and I start laying into him. I say, you know, this guy's a phony. He did this last month. He did it the month before. I'm giving him 3x5 cards. I've got evidence. You know, I'm a lawyer. I'm mapping out. I'm giving him an opening statement. I've got the proof. I mean, this is not bullshit. This is reality. This guy has every 30 days. We've been doing it for 6 months. He's never that, you know, we ought to turn this thing. God, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about anything. We ought to turn this car around. And, now I'm like my own lynch mob. I'm getting the more I talk, and then I do what alcoholics do. I'm repeating myself over and over again. I'm getting louder. And my sponsor. I'm like 8 months sober, you know. I'm 8 months something, you know what I mean? I'm something, you know. Whatever it is, you know, I got 8 months of it. I'm 8 months without a drink, okay? And And whatever it is when you have alcoholism, but you're not, whatever it is, I'm 8 months, I'm an alcoholic without drinking 8 months is what I am, okay? And it's really upsetting me, and I'm going crazy, and you know. And I'm my sponsor turns to me and he says, finally, I like tucker myself out. I'm yelling and screaming. I run out of words or something. And he says to me, he says, "Are you done?" And I looked at him and I said, "Yeah." He says, no, because I wasn't. I was still in my mind. It's like the locomotive, you know, it's going. He says, "Are you done?" He says, "Yeah." He says, no, are you done? I said, "Yeah, I'm done. He says, are you finished?" He says, I'm finished. I mean, what is he going to say? I mean, I was so right. I was alky right. If you disagree with me, you must die because you're so stupid. You know what I mean? And he looks at me and he says, "Russell." I said, "What?" He says, "Russell." He says, "What? What?" And this is what he says to me. "It doesn't bother me like it bothers you." And I look at him. Because he might as well have been talking Swahili to me. And I say, "How could it not bother you? Everything bothers me. Everything bothers." I was stark raving sober. I asked one of my sponsors once, Joe Snyder, I said, "You ever get resentments?" He said, "Get them, I give them." I didn't understand that. Because if somebody didn't like me, or if I thought, "You want to kill me, just come up to me," he says, "You wouldn't believe what they said about you last night. Just make me think that somebody's thinking a bad thought about me anywhere on the planet Earth, and I'm going to have to track that son of a bitch down, beat the shit out of him, and make him like me. You know, tell me, what did I do, you know? I'm sorry, you know? I said I was sorry." 9 years sober, something happened. Who knows what it was? It rained. Who the hell cares, you know? Some people need an excuse to drink. I drink because I'm awake. You know what I mean? Awake is painful enough for me. It's as good as it is for me. You know, when you're an alcoholic, you don't need anything to happen. The world. Somebody cut me off. There was traffic. It was a Wednesday. Who cares? You know what I mean? You know, I mean, whatever. You know, some guy sitting there, he's thinner than me. Who knows? Who cares? Whatever it is, life was, it was a bad deal. I get into a fight with my wife. Probably because she said something. I don't know. Something. She said she started talking, you know? Well, she disrespected me. Who knows, you know? And I get on the phone with my sponsor. I'm 9 years sober now. I've been doing the steps like this for 6 years at meetings. I've been secretary of the group. I've already been intergroup representative. I chaired the intergroup banquet twice, you know. I'm doing the deal, and I'm nuts. I'm doing the deal at 9 years, and I'm nuts, 9, 10 years. And I'm still stark raving crazy. Only I'm crazier at a higher level. You understand what I'm saying? A more advanced craziness. A subtler craziness that doesn't come out so much at meetings. You know what I mean? Just a different kind, a different level of craziness. You know, like if this was like a video game, I'd make it like the tenth level, you know, or something like that. But crazy at this level, and so I got on the phone with my sponsor Joe, and I start ripping into him about my wife and how she said this and how she did that because she was doing crap. She was no, let me tell you something. She was doing stuff. She was doing stuff. You know. I'm gonna tell you something. You know. Remember that first meeting? Remember that first meeting over at the South Dixie Room where those guys went? She was doing shit like that. It was like that kind of stuff. Whatever that stuff was, she was doing that stuff, you know? Remember Bobby? You know Bobby, the guy who kept on drinking? I don't know what my wife was doing, but it was something like that stuff, you know? It was like bothering, you know? She was doing stuff. You know that guy who said, I'm a recovered alcoholic? Now, I don't know what she was doing, but it was probably something like that, you know? It was something like that and all the other stuff that people do that piss you off, you know what I mean? You know, because if you're an alcoholic, you know, you ever notice, like, you take things personally, you know? Well, of course I'm taking things personally. I'm the most important thing in the world, and everything has to do with me. You get pissed off at bad shit that doesn't even have anything to do with you. You get pissed, you know, something happens on the other side of the world, you take it personally, you know what I mean? You just feel, I've never seen anybody in the universe that feels that feels disappointment, like I feel disappointment. I've never seen anybody in the universe that feels self-righteousness and feels like, you know, feels the way, looks the way I feel inside. I mean, I'm a sensitive feeling guy. I mean, I worry about stuff. I'm feeling, you know, and that kind of stuff. And she just did stuff. She did something. Maybe I told her not to do something. She did it. Or maybe she argued with me. Or maybe she said, who cares? You know what I mean? I mean, why did I marry this bitch in the first place? I mean, what's the point of staying married? And so I called my sponsor, because that's what you're supposed to do, because I still had that thing I didn't want to drink, which is very helpful to have, by the way, the not drinking thing. And I told him about everything she did. I told him, I gave him chapter and verse, you know, just like in the car. Remember with the South Dade Room, I told she said this, and I said that, and she said this, and I said that, and she did this, and I said that, and I told him the whole deal, you know? And after I was done, he said to me, he said this. You ready for this? He said, I told him, 10 minutes, bend his ear about everything she did. Man, and I'm telling you, if I told you what she did, I don't know how many of you guys sponsor people, you know? I'm a terrible sponsor, by the way. I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm a terrible sponsor. You know, my guys, they can start with this shit. They get like 30 seconds. Right, James? You get 30 seconds. Well, I said, I don't want to hear this bullshit, you know what I mean? Go kill yourself or drink, but you're fucking killing me, you know what I mean? I don't want to hear this shit, you know? But anyway, I had like nice sponsors. Something. My sponsors were nicer than me, you know? They would abuse me from time to time. So I tell him all this crap, you know? And he says to me this. He says, so you ready for this? Now, they ask you sponsors. They ask you stupid questions. I think that when they get about 20, 30 years, they get stupid. Like, sort of like the way I am now. I mean, I'm just dumb, you know? I don't know. I must be dumb because all my sponsees say, you don't understand. So, I mean, I obviously, there's something wrong with me, you know? And so my sponsor says to me, after I'm done laying this on all this stuff, and I'm upset, and I'm the one who's going crazy, and he says, do you know why? So why are you upset? I said, what do you mean, why am I upset? I says, do you know why you're upset? I said, what do you mean, do I know why I'm upset? He says, do you know why you're upset? And I go, Joe, I just spent 15, 20 minutes telling you exactly what she did, exactly what she said, exactly what happened, exactly why I'm upset. And he then said to me this. He said, I mean, you know why you're upset, right? When you're upset, don't you know why you're upset? Listen, I can tell you one thing. You may not know much, but I promise you this. If you're an alcoholic and you've ever been upset, the one thing you know is why you're upset, right? I want you to imagine this. When was the last time you were upset? You think about the last time you were upset. Did you know why you were upset? Right? That's why I said, I just told you why I was upset. And he says this to me. He says, that's not why you're upset. I'm giving you guys like advanced AA now. This is shit you never know anywhere else. I said, what do you mean? He says, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. How many times have you told somebody that you're upset? How many times in your life? 10,000, 20,000? You're upset and told them that? Did telling people why you're upset, did that ever fix the deal? That doesn't fix it, does it? You yelled and you screamed and everything like that. You feel like you got it off your chest until the next time. You just kept on getting upset, right? In other words, you just got upset a lot, but you didn't change. You didn't change. You stayed a thumb-sucking crybaby. So he says, that's not why you're... See, I'm in here to change. You know, in the big book, you know what it says? It says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the driving force of these men's lives are shifted off to one side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, attitudes. It's like you can live in the first South Dade room, where they're all worthless, crummy pieces of shit. Or you can live the rest of your life in the second South Dade room, where it's the greatest meeting in the world. You can be in the meeting with the idiot that doesn't know anything about alcoholism, and you got to sit there and listen to this bullshit. Or you can be in the room where you're listening to the greatest speaker in the world. See, you can be in a crummy marriage, married to this bitch or this guy, and why the hell am I doing here? Or you can be married to the greatest woman or the greatest man in the world. You got your choice. Of what you could be driving to pick up a drunk. You understand? And thinking it's the biggest bunch of bullshit and think he's a phony baloney and that you're wasting your time. Or you could be driving to pick up a drunk and thinking you're in God's will and be grateful. You could do this thing any way you want. You know, it has nothing to do with drinking. You can live. This is not like a dress rehearsal. This is your life. You can live your life like a selfish, self-centered, thumb-sucking, crybaby, two-year-old alcoholic. Or you can be one of the men, you know, the men and the boys. You know, you can be one of the men, you know, where you learn to be content, like the Apostle Paul said in Philippians 4:11. I love the way he says, I've learned the secret. It's 2,000 years ago he said this. He says, I've learned the secret. I've learned to be content in all things and under all circumstances, whether well-fed or hungry, whether in jail or not. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. It doesn't matter what my outward circumstances are. It doesn't matter how much money I have in the bank. It doesn't matter whether I have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or I'm having sex or not having sex or whether I'm being mistreated or I'm treated properly. It doesn't matter. My attitude and feelings about myself doesn't change. You know, it's like that guy said to Bill Wilson. He said, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. You know, they had this release, this happiness that I thought a person ought to have. They talk about it in the big book, in the promises, that you're going to know a new freedom. You're going to know a new happiness. They give you some examples. You no matter how far down you've gone, you're going to see where you can help people. You're not going to feel sorry for yourself. You're going to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. You're going to be reborn. You're going to lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. If you make a decision for him, all sorts of remarkable things will happen. He says, if you stay close to him and perform his works well, you're going to lose concerns about your own little plans and designs. You're going to start being more concerned about other people. You know, it tells you all this incredible stuff that's going to happen. That's the deal. 9 years sober, I still hadn't gotten it. I still hadn't figured it out. I'm sure there were some changes and different changes, but I was still, he says, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He said, no, that's not why you're upset. And then he shut up. You know, because he was brilliant. He shut up. He didn't say a word. Because he knew if he had told me why I was upset, I would have told him he was full of crap. You know, because I'm an alcoholic and I'm defiant. You know, I tell people they're stupid and you know, they don't know what they're. So he didn't say anything. He says, that's not why you're upset. So if you're sitting there and your sponsor, after you lay this all on him, says, that's not why you're upset, and then shuts up, and you say, that's not why I'm upset, and he says, no, that's not why you're upset. Like he knows the secret. So what do you think you're going to do? So I said to him, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. I said, well, you're going to tell me why I'm upset? So he goes, do you really want to know? he wants me to beg, you know. That way, if I get mad, he could say, you asked. You asked me, you know what I mean? You know, when somebody says, my husband or so-and-so is in trouble, I say, have him call me. Well, can you call him? I say, no, have him call me. Because when he yells and screams and tells me I'm full of shit, give me the ability to say, listen, buddy, you called me. I didn't call you. You called me. I didn't call you. You know? Give me the ability. I got to have something on the alky. You know what I mean? You know, because he thinks he's so self-important. He thinks that, like, he's doing me a favor talking to me. He said, that's not why I'm upset. He says, do you really want to know? I say, well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He says, listen, stupid. He always talked to me in that loving sort of way, you know. That's exactly what he said. He said, listen, stupid. He said, because then now I'm listening, you know. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. It's like Zen AA or something. Like, you're upset because you're upsettable. So my wife, you know, hasn't changed much. She's the same deal. You know what I mean? AA hasn't changed much. My sponsees haven't changed much. They're doing the same thing that, you know, Bobby was doing the bomb. You know? I'm not sure when I realized that none of this stuff was bothering me anymore. You know, they have a spiritual accent whenever you're disturbed. You know, the truth is, when he told me at 9 years, you're upset because you're upsettable. It's what's going on inside of you. It's a problem, it's the disease inside of you. That's why you're upset. When he said that, he was actually saying the same exact thing to me that my sponsor said to me at 3 months. When I was driving the car up to Bobby, and I went through that whole long, and he looked at me and he said, this is what it said. He said, Russell, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. It doesn't upset me like it upsets you. You're upset because you're upsettable and you allow things to upset you. Things that upset you do not upset me. You know, he had that new freedom. He had that new happiness. You know, he had that deal going on. He had learned to be content in all things. You know, no matter what was going on, his life and how he felt about himself and how he felt about things no longer depended upon the external circumstances of his life. You know, it depended on something that was going on. Inside for me, I was all over the place. I was like the double-minded man. I was here, I was there, I was up, I was down. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you know, one day you're high. Then once you're high, you're low, you're high, you're low. That's like the first hour, you know what I mean? You're up, you're down. I'm a winner, I'm a loser, I'm employed, I'm fired. I love this job, I hate this job, you know? You know, I can't be employed, I'm unemployed. They're paying me too little, they're screwing me. I mean, it's always, you win, you lose. The joy of victory, the agony of defeat. It's always, I'm great, I'm bad. It's not like no in between. In between is like boring, you know? I mean, feeling sorry for yourself and suicidal is just as good as feeling great about yourself and better than everybody. It's got to be one of the two. It can't be in between because that's like nothing's going on. You know what I mean? I don't feel like I'm alive unless I'm killing somebody or hating somebody or looking. If I'm not in trouble, I'm looking for the trouble. I'm looking for the depression. You know? You know, I mean, I'm the guy. Let me hook up with the worst person I could probably hook up with because, you know, I like that gal. She excites me when she tries to stab me with a knife. It's like, you know, she's got like a personality, you know what I mean? At least she's got a personality, you know what I mean? So here's the deal. 9 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Look, I'm just talking about my own. You know, I say things to people. Doesn't go over big in AA rooms, but I say things based upon my experience. I say, you know, I wanted to have 30 years. I wanted to have the thing the 30-year guys had. And look, nobody's perfect. You know, there's probably things that still upset. You know, I get upset, twice a week for 3 minutes, you know, whatever, and then it's done, you know, I mean, it's over. But it's not like the way it used to be, you know what I mean? It's not like I hang on to things for 4 days and 3 weeks. I go to 15 meetings and a psychiatrist and sucking my thumbs and I'm tossing and turning and I can't get to sleep and I'm worried about what happened last Tuesday and how it's going to affect. You know, it's not like that to you. You know what I mean? 3 minutes twice a week, you know, pissed off and then forget about it and move on, you know? You understand what I'm saying? It's a whole different deal. It's a whole different freedom. And, I've been working on this thing for 9 years. I tell people, you know, they'll tell me about a problem they're having, and maybe they'll have 8, 9, 10, 12 years. I say, hey, listen, that's going to go away. He says, really? Yeah, 20, 25 years. They look at me like I'm crazy, because alcoholics, You know how I used to make things go away? You know how I used to make things go away? Whack. Maybe whack whack. I drank fast. I was a fast drinker. Because I drank for the effect. I drank for the effect. You see, if you're feeling sorry for yourself, you're feeling lonely, you're feeling anything, whack whack, 5 seconds, you're done. As I was pulling up to the bar, I was feeling better. You know? Listen to what I want. You want to feel better? Buy a blouse. Change your hair color. You know what I mean? Lose some weight. You know, do whatever, but whatever it is, do it. Pop a pill. Smoke a joint. Do something. Go to the movies. Do something external that's fast that can get you to die. But you see, the problem is that's not the cure. That's all that, all you're doing is you're diverting your attention from the sorry, shitty condition you're in. And then as soon as you get out of the movie, and as soon as the new suit wears off, you know, as soon as you overspend the money that you don't have to buy things you don't even need to impress people you don't even like, as soon as you get the new car and the new car payments come in, as soon as you do all that stuff, you know what I mean? One day the car is 2 days old, you know, or it has a flat tire, and you're back in the shits again, upset and crappy with the same old crap, but this time with car payments. You know what I mean? And broke. You know, and you just can't, and you, so how do you change this thing when you're used to changing how you feel and your attitude in 5 nanoseconds with a drink or a drug or a joint or something like that? And then you go up to some sponsor and it tells you you're going to be fine, it's going to be great in about 20 years. That separates the men from the boys, doesn't it, you know? But that's the truth, perseverance. And then you look at the book of James, That's when you go to the book of James, which was the source material, where James, the Apostle James, that's the source material. We almost called the book, it says, rejoice. This is the book of James, chapter 1. Rejoice when you have trials of many kinds. In other words, when you're going through the shits and things are horrible, and Bobby's getting drunk, you know what I mean? And the guy, the speaker, is an idiot, and your wife is treating you like crap, rejoice. Rejoice. Say, man, this is incredible. This is great. It's great. You know, you'll believe what you tell yourself. You tell yourself it's shitty. Say, it's great. It says, rejoice when you have trials of many kinds. Because this is what he says, when you persevere, when you endure through trials, without the drinking, the drugging, the spending, the gossiping, the doing all the crap that you do, and you focus on God, what it does is it strengthens your faith, and this is all about faith. That's the big one. It's all about faith. I'm going to prove it to you in a second. You strengthen your faith. And when you strengthen your faith, you sit through that endurance, you become somebody who can withstand, you change. That's what changes you. That's the things that you think are the worst things in your life. Let me tell you something. The things that where you don't suffer consequences, where you don't suffer pain, I don't know if you've ever known a spoiled brat. When everything goes right for you and you never have a problem, that turns you into the worst human being on the planet Earth. When you are having the crap beat out of you, and while you're having the crap beat out of you, while you're bored, while you're broke, while you're doing this, you're persevering, you're trusting in God, and you're helping other people anyway, and you're going to meetings, and you're trucking through anyway, and not only you're not drinking, you're trying to do the right thing. When you do that, that's what makes you the guy with 20, 25 years that says it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. That's what does it. But the problem is most alcoholics don't want to do that deal because they want a pill. They want the shortcut. That's what they want to do. That's the deal. And that's what James says. And then it goes on to say, he says, but you have to have faith. And it's got to be faith without doubt. Because when you have faith without doubt, you're a double-minded man living a double-minded life. You're going to be tossed and turned this way and that way, and you'll receive nothing. You know what the big book says? It says if you don't change, it says the result is nil until you let go absolutely. Now, here's what it says. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength, The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. You know, you guys are all looking for the answer. Everybody here is looking, just like, you know, Bill Dotson was. I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. The answer is right here in the book. It's in the Bible. It's been around for thousands. The answer is going through the suffering. You know, if you look at the seventh step, you know what it says in the seventh step? How's this one? He says we start to learn the value of suffering. The way we get a new perspective is by 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. By the way, you know how you got into Alcoholics Anonymous? You were crushed. You didn't get here because you were having a good time. You got here because it was the worst time. It was the worst. You thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to you in your life. And out of the worst thing that happened to you in your life, you ended up getting the best gift that you could possibly get in your life. You know, what makes you think it's going to be any different as you go along on the deal? It's all, and so you guys go to these discussion meetings complaining about all the crap that's happening to you, not understanding that it's the crap that's happening to you that's going to save your life. And the reason you're complaining, and the only reason you're complaining, is you're looking at yourself, and you're looking at your world, and you're looking at your circumstances, and you're not looking at God. You're not looking at God. You don't believe. You don't have faith. You don't understand that no matter what's happening, it's all for your benefit, all for your discipline, all to change you and to give you more faith. And we should be saying, thank you, God, for this cancer. Thank you, God, for this broke. Thank you, God, for everything, because you want to know something? I'm still sober, and look at all the stuff I have, and I'm just going to believe in you that this is for a purpose. Instead of doing that, which is something a man or somebody who encouraged you to do, you like to act like a 5-year-old thumb-sucking crybaby and go to meetings and complain and whine like you did when you're in the bars drinking. And all you do is just delay the process. And most people in Alcoholics Anonymous are going to end up drinking anyway. They're not going to persevere. They're not going to make it anyway. And they'll never understand why, because they think this is all about getting money, power, and prestige, and getting wonderfulness. And you got all sorts of movie stars are getting all that stuff, and they're committing suicide and killing themselves. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with building character, perseverance, and faith in God. So thank you very much.